I'm doing fine, and thank you, Sally, for everything. And we have a wonderful guest on this evening, and this is a very important topic. I have been contacted, and I have received tons of emails on this. We have and are very grateful to have Chris Blystone, and he is an 8-year veteran in the U.S. Army, and he is one of the people that are working on the Operation American Spring that is going to be held in May, with people going to Washington and standing for our Constitution and our country. Good evening, Chris, and we're so very, very happy to have you with us this evening.
Thanks, girls. I appreciate it. I appreciate you having us on.
Good. Could you please give us a little information on your background? Because, like I said, you were in the military. And what brought you with your background up to this point?
That could be a long story. Yes, I'm former military. I served in three different theaters. I was with an organization called the 160th SOAR, where the Black Hawk Down is our unit. That's my old unit. That's the time that I spent with. I sat back and, you know, I haven't really been involved in politics. I swore an oath to the Constitution, but quite frankly, when I got out of the military, I kind of washed myself of that. I had a wife and a family, and I'm a small business owner, and I just kind of got lost in the monotony of life, trying to forget the time on the battlefield. It's not something that you want to remember or relish.
Oh, yes.
So as I sat back, it wasn't too long ago, I'd say right around the time that President Obama got elected, that I really got awakened, and I saw the death spiral, as it were, of our nation. I've spent a lot of time overseas in Europe and other locations where I've seen socialism at work. I've seen fascism at work, and it's not something I want to see on my country's soil. The debt, in particular, really drives me insane, that all of the fighting and the sacrifices that great men and women made overseas, it's all been for naught if we come back to this level of debt. That we fight for freedom, but our freedom's already sold. The debt is a chain on our necks. And it has indebted our children. Our children are slaves. They don't even know it. They don't have a job yet, but they're already in slavery.
Exactly.
And
well,
so
at this point, Chris,
it's really heartbreaking when I sit back and I look at the sacrifices that were made, all being in vain, if we can't correct this, if we can't right the ship.
Exactly. Well, at this point, after listening to what you just said, I would like to take a moment, and I would, along with the listeners and Sally, myself, would like to thank you and all the brave men and women that love our country and are true patriots, and for all the sacrifices that they have made and their families and their friends. Even though they have come home, they have come home with a broken heart. And I'm sure that when they do get home and see what's going on in this country today, it doesn't take much to break the other half of their heart.
No, it doesn't.
No. So can you tell me then, since you are in leadership and you're going to be, you're already participating and building up in the training with this Operation American Spring, this is going to be on May 16th, is that correct?
Yes. And continuing. That's when it starts, yes.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of response are you getting and the people working with you on this as far as people that are going to be participating? Do you look for this to really do or mean something? And can you explain to our listeners a little bit more about it?
Well, I sat back as a patriot, and I'm listening to alternative radios and shows like yours, and reading blogs and going out there and trying to stay informed. And as I do so, I run into an article about Operation American Spring. It was a newspaper piece, and it had the mission statement, the phase one, the phase two, phase three, who we are, what we're standing for, how we mean to do it, what we mean to achieve. And as I read the article, God kind of, I don't want to sound like we're going to church here, so bear with me, but I really felt compelled that I needed to be a part of this.
I can quite understand that.
I didn't quite understand it all. I certainly didn't have all the answers as far as the logistics or the legal means or how we actually accomplish these goals. But I felt compelled that this was a fight I needed to be a part of, that we didn't have a whole bunch of time left. I don't know that we make it to the next election the way things are headed now. And quite frankly, I don't know that the next election fixes anything anyway. Like the President Reagan said, that government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. So to sit back and wait for some election cycle to remedy the situation probably isn't going to get us very far. We're asking government to regulate itself. We're asking a government that has proven itself completely lawless to sit back and regulate themselves.
I totally agree.
Sorry, girls.
No, I just totally agree with you, because we've gone through elections after elections after elections, and nothing, absolutely nothing, has changed the direction that has brought us to where we are today.
As a matter of fact, I would argue that it's actually accelerated everything. We're going faster and faster and faster. The train's picking up speed. So we all have differing opinions of the state of our nation. We differ about its direction and its future, and sometimes we even argue about its past. Each of us has our hot-button topic, whether it's Common Core or Fast and Furious or Agenda 21 or Benghazi or Extortion 17. It could be Obamacare or the IRS scandals, this Orwellian-type society that's promoted by the NSA. I can't speak for everybody's individual underlying issue. To be frank, there's so many issues, it's hard to keep track of and pinpoint the truth sometimes. So I can't say the opinion of everyone at OAS, but this is a movement, first and foremost, of its people, not necessarily of me or leadership or Colonel Riley, but of its people. We don't set the tone, they do.
Chris. Let me just, I'm one of these, I was there on the Hill for the 2010 fighting the Obamacare thing, and I was there at the 9/12 event, and I was up there protesting what this government was doing myself, and I'm actually right now contemplating whether I'm going to be able to go up there on the 16th and what it's all going to be. And I can tell you, I mean, I personally want, I think we need to do it, because I truly don't think we have a constitution today. We have a lawless government, as you were saying. But here's what I kind of get when I'm talking to people about it. And, you know, you talk about what do we do to right the ship kind of thing. You can't, it's okay to say, sit and talk about elections, but we've got to do something more than that as far as I'm concerned. And so I right now intending to want to go there and trying to make it happen so that I can. But I got to ask you, here's some of the things that people come back to me on, and I don't really know what to tell them, and maybe you can shed some light. We've seen different videos, YouTubes out there lately, where you literally have people in the military, your military saying they don't trust some of the people with them because they believe it's been taken over, something similar to the Fort Hood routine. And then the other is, well, there's been no secret about this operation American Spring, and so we know Obama and company, and the other communists who are within this country these days, the enemy from within, as I refer to them, they're going to embed people amongst us that are going to become violent. Then they're the martial law kind of thing, and will our own government turn against the people? Will our own military at that point be so corrupted that it and many of them turn against us? I don't think they all would, but I think some would, just like, again, the thing with Fort Hood. So what do we think is going to happen when, if we get the 10 million people there, what do you think this government is going to do to us? And, you know, that's, I get a lot of people with that kind of martial law, then this makes Obama the king that he wants to be anyway, and all these various things. You see where I'm coming from, and I'm sure you must have heard people talk
about it. I sure can. Yeah, absolutely.
Too.
So let me elaborate on the martial law argument.
Okay.
There's a lot of people that have fear. We all sit back and we're afraid. We're afraid of martial law. We're afraid of an IRS coming down on us. We're afraid of NSAs listening to our phone calls. We're afraid. In general, we are afraid of our federal government. And conversely, our federal government has absolutely no fear of us. They have us cowed, right? They have us beaten into submission. They outarm us. They have their tanks. They have their gear. They have their planes. So therefore, they are immune to any anger from us. At least that's what they think. And I think that Operation American Spring is about reversing that paradigm. It's about turning that trend. We need to show the American people that they shouldn't be afraid, that they can stand up, and by God, they have a duty to stand up, that now is our time. They have made it clear that he has a pen and a phone, and he's going to do whatever the hell he wants, and there's nothing that you and I can stop him. We're just a bunch of crazy teeth harriers. That's all we are. We don't have any real teeth, and we need to show them otherwise. The other movements before us have been great. I was there for the 9/12 project. I was there back in October. We've had those protests before, but quite frankly, what have they accomplished? Nothing. They've raised awareness. We got a couple of TV spots. Did D.C. change? No. Matter of fact, I'd say they have to up the ante and made it worse. We've petitioned them, and we get nothing back but mock and scorn. So unlike other movements before that have been a day or two and then we go home, the difference with Operation American Spring is we want to stay in their face. We want to shut the city down. I don't mean with violence, but enough people there, just enough people to clog the roadways, to clog the subway system, to overwhelm them. So when I look out my Capitol window office and I can see the crowd, it's one thing when they're there one day and I can just ignore them and they'll be gone the next. But what happens when they're there the next day and the next day and the next day? And I can't even go home. I can't go to the grocery store. They're emptied. I can't make it to the McDonald's. The line's 2 miles long. How do I deal with that if that's my city, if I live there? Things get tough. We make their lives difficult. That same scenario is what Egypt did. It's what Iceland did. And it worked with great effect for them. It wasn't a protest where they came and just waved their flags and stomped their feet and went home. They went there with the diligence and the fortitude that they were going to stay no matter what the cost. If you come at us with anything militarily, if they come at us with tear gas or riot control or, God forbid, shooting us, quite frankly, we win. Because this battle isn't for the battle of the ground on D.C. That's not what this is about. This is a battle for the hearts and minds of the American people. We have to show the American government, the federal government, that they damn well better be afraid of us. That's the way we were designed. We were designed to be the people that generated fear, not the other way around. When they generate all the fear, that's tyranny.
Yes.
That's oppression. And we have to reverse that paradigm by showing the American people to stand up and say, yes, I can stand up. Yes, you better listen to me. You better strike in the ship, or by God, you need to get out. That's what we have to do. And that's the difference between Operation American Spring and so many other rallies. Now, I don't mean that to be critical of those other rallies. They're great. Again, I was at them. When we were there in D.C. in October, and we tore down the barricades around the World War II memorial, and we threw them away, the police stood there and watched. They didn't really get involved. As a matter of fact, a couple of them actually stepped up to help. They were disgusted by it as well. And when the only time it got really hairy is we picked up all those same barricades, and we took them to 1600 and piled them up in front of the White House. Now, when you looked at those from a military aspect, I looked at that, and all I would have to do is climb one of those things, and I'm up and over the gate. I'm over the fence and into the White House pretty quickly. So needless to say, the police got responsive and outlined that and tried to back us away from what essentially was siege material we could use to scale the walls with.
Right.
And, you know, I've been in combat, and I recognize adrenaline, and I recognize anger, and I recognize fear, and that fight or flight look in somebody's eyes. And these were all veterans. And they were all standing out there, and they were pissed off. And it was at a hair at some points, where you could see that these men were being pushed to their limit. I'm talking Korean War and Vietnam era vets, old men,
mm-hmm.
that were standing on the precipice, you know, the cliffs right there. And they probably haven't been this angry ever, is the look that I see in their eyes. And I think that's a good picture of where our military and our former vets and our law enforcement sits, the anger that we see, and our oath, the oath that we swore. And when we swore it, our lives were on the line. We're not some congressman that doesn't have to worry about anything. We're out there putting our lives on the line for that oath. We meant it, and we meant to keep it. We meant to die for it. And we sit back and watch these guys in D.C. take that same oath and not mean a stinking word.
Exactly.
It makes
exactly.
us angry.
Well, I can honestly tell you, like I told you, I come from a strong military background. I've had uncles that served in two wars, World War II, Korean War, and they always said we didn't fight a battle for that day, but we fought that battle for the future of America. And I find it appalling. Absolutely, there's got to be another word. I don't know what it would be, but it's appalling the way our government is treating our military men and women. It is disgraceful. And I hope other countries are noticing this. I hope they see some of this.
Well,
when we go down, the rest of the world's going to go at the same time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're at that edge. We really are.
Yep.
When you look at the debt that we've incurred, I heard it argued pretty articulately that the federal government has four jobs. It's to maintain a domestic policy. It's to maintain an international policy. It's to maintain a military presence and a military strength. And it's to maintain an economic policy, a dime format. That dime format, I don't care what light you shed on it, every four of those things have been destroyed. Completely and utterly. They are ignoring our Constitution on a daily basis. They are willingly and intentionally driving us right into the ground.
Oh, yes. And it's being done on purpose.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, there's no question in my mind whatsoever. One thing I would like to just get in here for a moment, Chris, is I do know that one thing that's going to help save this country is to get constitutional, God-loving Americans to run for office, whether it's from local level all the way up to federal. And I can't think of any better people than people that have been in our military to run for office.
Well,
that is going to help.
I appreciate that, but I want to enlighten you a little bit. The media is pretty harsh on us.
I know that,
It makes it very hard for us. Number two, we're pretty poor, to be honest with you. I'm a broke-down old white boy. I live in a double-wide. I drive a 12-year-old car. It's who I are. Running a campaign takes a ton of money. Not only that, we were soldiers. And quite frankly, soldiers can be a little rough and tough. We get into trouble. We get into bar fights. We got nasty girlfriends. Things like that that don't necessarily appear very good on a ballot. And in this media age where the media can just rip apart a family and nothing flat.
Oh, yeah.
it makes us pretty afraid to step out there.
But I do think at a local level, because if you can do something in your own community, your board of commissioners, your city councils, and so forth, this is a means of taking back and protecting your states. As more states start standing up for America and the liberty that our founding fathers set up for us, that is going to really change the ways of Washington.
I agree.
And I know I ran a campaign, and I can tell you I ran for commissioner. I had never run for office of any kind before, and like you said, very poor. I live from month to month. I spent less than $30 on my campaign, and I got over a third of the vote, and now people know who I am, what is going on more so since that time, and now they want to get out and back me this time. I did not have one sign out, and I got over a third of the vote.
Awesome.
This is why I say start at your local level.
Now, I have a question, and I don't want you to feel that this is harsh in any way.
Oh, no.
I have a question. Do we have time for that? So,
quite honestly, I really don't know, but I keep planning regardless.
I think that is something that has
know?
To happen. I agree that that is something that has to happen. That's our path back.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to turn the train around. Our path back has to be at a local level. That's the way we were designed, right? We're a republic.
Yeah.
We're not a democracy. We're a republic. So it has to be at a local level. And but if we mean to change this and right the ship, I don't think we have time to win back our state legislatures. They're already powerless, quite frankly.
Yeah.
They've already signed their sovereignty away. Our states are already bought and sold. I had a conversation with a local. Now, I live in Texas, and I want to put it to a different way. Let's look at it from a monetary aspect. In the state of Texas, when we give a dollar to the federal government in the form of taxes, we get 13 cents back in federal aid. And I had a conversation with a guy in Louisiana, a state legislature, and I asked him, why don't we as states stand up and say no to this? And he's the one that enlightened me. Your state could do that. But my state, when I send a dollar in for federal tax, I get $3 back in federal aid. So I need to keep silent, or my schools close, or my roads aren't open, or fire departments get closed. That's what happens when I say no. You can say no all day long, but we can't. They've been bought. Now, imagine being the guy that's in the legislature and they just sold no to the federal government, and the federal government shuts off the funding and the schools close. Think he's going to get reelected? Now, quite frankly, he ought to do it anyway. But that's his fear.
Right.
That's his fear. Now, I don't want to say that the things at the local level and these local our state legislatures, even our city and our county positions, that those aren't important. They are drastically important, and that is our way out of the mess. But before we can get to that point, we have to restore our constitutional value. We have to get back to the beginning on our foundation so that those state legislatures mean something, so that county sheriff, when he has a job, it means something. Because right now it means nothing. He's a federal puppet, and he knows it. So we have to reverse the ship before we can get there.
Well,
now I don't want to knock those patriots that go out there. Their abilities, and well, they're worthy people, but we all have differing ideas on how to restore our nation.
Right.
Different people see different things, the same subject in a different light. And I don't want to mean to be sounding disrespectful.
Oh, no, you're not. You're not. You're not. So don't. Well, here, put it this way now. Let's get back on the main track here a little bit. Did you know of Colonel Riley before you saw this and what was going to be taking place and looked into it? Were
no.
you familiar with him at all? No?
No, I hadn't. I had actually got out of the military about the year. I got into the military about the year he was getting out.
Because he served, I saw, over 34 years.
Yes, but he got out in 92.
Mm-hmm.
I went in 93.
Mm-hmm.
So, and at that point, he was up there in high-ranking military intelligence. I believe that he worked for the NSA for some point and several other things at that point.
So you are looking and hoping that we will get at least 10 million people there. I think we need a lot more, in my opinion, but
well,
I'd be happy if that would happen.
If Egypt can stand up and get 30 million fighting for their freedoms and their liberties, if little old Iceland can show up with 5 million, what can we do?
I know. This is it. It seems like the American people are just sitting back. They're not happy. They want things changed, but they're not willing to participate.
Well, what's baffling to me is more people seem to be sitting back and watching for a leader. We're waiting for a Ronald Reagan to come and wave the flag so I can jump in and rally behind him. We're waiting for somebody else to step up and lead so we can follow. And that, in my opinion, is the disease that has affected our nation. We are so risk-averse. We don't want to take a chance. And that's not how we were founded, is it?
No.
No, that's the true we the sheeple syndrome, and most of that I blame on public education, where we've been taught and brainwashed into thinking that, well, if you voted, that was all you were supposed to do, and that citizenship doesn't have anything else to it, and this other stuff. But, I mean, with Obamacare and the various things that have happened in the past, I'll say 10 years, 5 to 10 years, people have woken up a lot. There's a lot of us. And it was only a minority that started the revolution to begin with, and then the sheeple came along. But there were many, you know, people are not instinctively willing to go out there. I mean, I don't know, there is some nature. Definitely not all people are leaders, but they all want somebody to protect them. They want someone to lead them in the direction they want to go. Sometimes they don't even seem to know what direction that is. So I definitely, yep. I totally agree with what you're saying there. The couple of things I want to kind of get in, just a couple of points to make, and then I'll give it back to you. If you can't go to D.C., what are they trying to do at the state capitals? And then we all have to face the fact, just like you said about the $3, the guy says, well, but I'm bringing the $3 back and blah, blah, blah. We have to say it out loud. There's going to sacrifice. Americans have always had to sacrifice in order to be free. Freedom isn't free. And we better understand what tough love and sacrifice means. Otherwise, we will be totally converted into the serfs and the slaves, as we were talking, as we go to become a totally communist country. And I totally agree with what you said. We don't truly have a constitution today.
No, we don't. We don't. At a state level, for those that can't join, first off, help those that can. If you can't be there, I understand. We all have life. We all have obligations. I can't get away. Or I have this health issue, or whatever the case may be. I understand that. I'll represent you. I'll fight for you. But I need your help to get there. I don't care if it's you've got some camping gear that's sitting up in the attic. Let me borrow it. You've got a vehicle that I can borrow. That'll help me get there. You've got, buy me a tank of gas. Buy me some rice and beans so I can feed everybody once I'm up there. There are lots of different ways that we can help and essentially fund this. It's not cheap to go on a two-week camping trip to D.C. So we can't all individually try to do that. It'll bankrupt us. But those of us that aren't going, chip in. Help us out. Now, we don't want money. OAS is not asking for any money. We don't want to touch a dime. But if you know somebody that's going, help them get there. OAS doesn't want to be the middleman, but you can go straight to that person and help them. Fill up their tank for them. Get them some camping gear. Buy them a cot. Whatever the case, get them there. As far as the state levels, we're encouraging people. Like here in Texas, we've got one on April 9th right at our state capitol. We need to get out there in front of this and build momentum for OAS. It's going to take a lot of local rallies. And I don't care if it's an overpass rally where you got five people standing on the bridge waving a flag. I don't care what it is. Anything that raises awareness and says it's coming. OAS is on the way. Be the John the Baptist to run out there and scream, the British are coming, the British are coming. We've got to have that argument that OAS is coming. Raising awareness. There's going to be a lot of people that can't make it that week, but show up the next. We're going to need reinforcements. For the guys that have made it there, we've been there 2 weeks, we can't take it anymore, we got to go home, they're going to need somebody to fill their shoes. It's the only way it's going to work.
Exactly. Is there any place that if people did want to help donate that absolutely can't go and wish with all their heart they could? Do you have
anything? Go to OperationAmericanSpring.org. You'll see a forum link that says OAS Gives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a forum where people that are needing help can go and post, hey, I'm going to have trouble getting there. I can go. I have the time, but I don't have the resources. I need help.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you could contact. I wouldn't recommend actually posting up there for everybody to see that you had something and you were willing to give it. You'd be inundated in hours. But find somebody whose story reaches out to you and touches you and contact them privately.
Mm-hmm. Because I personally know several people that are going, even out of the state of Florida, and they said they plan on staying there. They are not coming back after that day. And these are wonderful people. They know the issues, the love for this country that they have, our Constitution. And my heart goes out to all of them. I mean, these are wonderful people, and I hope people that are listening will please stop and think, if you can go on May 16th, this is very important. If you can't make it that day, then how about the next day? How about the day after that? We want this to continue. It's not a one-day thing. This is going to keep going on. Now, do you really think, your opinion, as far as staying there, Chris, do you think this is going to make an impression on some of these representatives and senators, or is this going to become a mocked event as far as they're concerned?
I think they'll try to mock us initially.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was Gandhi. What was first they ignore you, then they mock you, then they fear you. It goes through a progression. We've been ignored long enough, right? I think we'd all agree
that
our petitions and our grievances have been ignored completely and utterly. So we're in that mocking stage, right, where they mock us as teabaggers or whatever the heck they want to call us, right? We're the right-wing extremist crazy people, right? So I can endure that mocking. I don't know about you, but I've gotten to the point where
mm-hmm.
I laugh at it. 10 million people, if we're able to get the numbers, can we be ignored and mocked? No, I don't think we can. That city, let's look at it logistically. You asked about the martial law, so let's talk some numbers for a second. If I take every active duty police officer in D.C., every active duty Capitol Police, D.C. Police, I activate the National Guard, I call in the Marines, I've got everybody there, as many people as I can get in the surrounding area. Within a 50-mile radius, I called every law enforcement and every military, and I put them in the city on duty at once. How many people do I have?
Yeah.
The number's 15,000. Everybody on duty at once, their number is 15,000. Now, let's do the math on that. They're 15,000. Let's call it 1.5 million. Do the math. We outnumber them 100-1.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard nothing about this in the media, which isn't really too surprising, but have you guys been able to get any of the media to put anything out there about this in any way?
No. No. And what we need is people that are involved in the movement to really harass the Sean Hannitys and the Glenn Becks and the Mark Levins and the Mike Savages and get on their, call them five times a day and try to get on their radio program to talk about it. if they are getting so many calls from their listeners that they can no longer ignore it, we won't get there. We can do those shows, and we're ready for them. We've contacted them, but they continue to ignore us. Because let's be honest, I don't want to, again, I don't want to get back to where I'm mocking them. But there's a lot of talk, and this is a time for action. And I don't think that gives them the platform. The guys like Mark Levin are pushing for the conventions of states. I agree, and I think that's a great thing. I don't have a problem with the convention of states. I also think it's a pipe dream, a crack pipe. It's not going to happen. We're not going to get 38 states to agree that the sky is blue, much less be able to rally enough votes to get what we wanted. Besides that, once the Congress was opened and we had the Continental Congress, we as the people that organized it and got it already have no say in what happens. We could come out with a law banning, an amendment to the Constitution banning the Tooth Fairy, and that the Sushi Police and the Grammar Police are now united in this common cause for liberty and justice throughout the world. We don't know what we've come out with. So I don't think a convention of states gets it done. Now, Mark Levin is a much more intelligent man than me. I'm just a simple lowlife. So what I say, obviously, I can't go on to Mark Levin and tell him that. He'd put me to shame. But we have to, again, that argument that government is the problem, not the solution to the problem. It is the problem. So why do we keep going back to the government for our solutions? We can't.
Exactly.
We have to enforce our Constitution. And if they won't listen to us, we've got to drag them out. I'm afraid that's what it's going to take. Now, I don't know in OAS if we just shame them out of existence and shame them out of office. I don't think these guys have any shame.
No.
There are some legal things going on in the works. I'm not sure. I'm not privy to all of it, but there's some legal things going on in the background.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I'm curious about because, and as I've read up on the Operation American Spring, going out there and forcing Harry Reid out of office, forcing John Boehner, forcing Obama, forcing these people out of office, Pelosi, I would jump for joy. And the celebration would be enormous. I think the world would hear all of us if we would get rid of some of these people who buy their way into office. It's not because they truly got elected in any kind of honest, legitimate election. It's because of the political process being so crooked and corrupt in itself, too, that these same people keep being given the power over and over and over again. So, that's the next thing. Okay, we got the 10 million people on the Hill. And, 2 weeks later, we still got 9.9 million, whatever. We've got almost everybody still there. Some have come, some are gone, whatever. But you're still taking over that Hill. What happens when Nancy Pelosi wants to go fly back to San Francisco? Or what are we going to do to force her to resign kind of thing? And maybe that's that legal aspect that we don't have enough on. Or what do we truly do to force these people out of office? Because they're never going to follow the Constitution. And as long as we let them continue on, they're going to just laugh at us and keep doing what they're doing.
Well, let's go back. What did Patrick Henry say? That he knows no other light but to let me think about that. I have but one lamp by which my feet are guided, and it is the lamp of experience. And I know no way of judging the future but by the past. So as we look at our past, both as a U.S. nation, did those guys follow the rules? They still won. Let's go back to Egypt and look at the way these guys did it. And they did it twice in the last year. They kicked them out once. They didn't like the results of the way that one happened, so they kicked them out again. How did it work? Those guys didn't agree on anything. If you asked five people in the crowd what color the sky was, I bet you'd get six different answers. They didn't agree on much. They just agreed that something had to happen, that we had to stand up and fight. Enough is enough. And I think we're at the same point. The same thing happened in Iceland, except that those people were actually united. They knew what they were doing. They had a cause, and they were ready to fight for it. So they went there to their capital, and they got it done. They didn't just get those guys out. They got all the bankers out. They got everybody out. They cleaned house. And within what,
Bravo.
6 months? Within 6 months, they were back on track. Now, don't get me wrong, this isn't going to be an easy recovery. This is not going to be something we're just going to walk up there and they're going to go, okay, you know, they showed up, we better go home. It's not going to be that easy. So what is our teeth? What is our teeth? It has to be the media coverage. We almost hope that they overreact. If they do something stupid, if they come out and try to silence us, the press coverage from that would be political suicide, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
That means we win. Because remember that argument that I said, that this is about fear. The American people are afraid and the federal government is not. If they come out and answer us with force in any way against a peaceful protest, that means we're starting to win. We've got their backs to the wall. They're up against the ropes, and they're afraid. So they're trying to disperse us because they know we could get somewhere. And that's when we have to get hardened and get fired up. Can they continue to ignore us after a week of the city being shut down? We're talking with that many people. The mall is designed to handle about 400,000. Anything more than that, and things get pretty crowded, right? If you get the numbers like this, we're talking you can't drive in the city. Forget about it. The streets are clogged with feet. Can they continue to ignore that? Will the media try to downsize it? Look at the thousands of people, like they did with the 9/12 project or the Glenn Beck rally or the Tea Party rally, to minimize the numbers and make it look inconsequential. Can they do that? Yeah, they can for the first couple of days. After that, it's going to get pretty hard to ignore.
Yes,
besides
exactly.
that, I think our biggest weapon is a bunch of cameras. Our biggest weapon is a bunch of people like you telling the story back home. That is important to us. We've got to spread the word through our social media sites, through our YouTubes, for our blog talk radios. We've got to do those things to get the word out there because we certainly can't trust the mainstream media to tell the truth. I think they've proven that. So that's our teeth, is when we shut the city down and essentially put it under siege peacefully, that's not something that the media can ignore. And when they have to come up and say what's going on, that's when we have our voice that says, these are our demands. When we get out there and we've got the media coverage and the guys that are sitting back at home that have been watching, they're thinking it wasn't going to succeed or wondering if it was going to have the numbers or whatever, and they see this on the news, do you think they pack up their stuff and come? I hope so. Samuel Adams said that when this tight crisis comes, that our patriots would unite. And he had a faith in this that I'm not sure I carry anymore. I have a lot of doubt that our fellow patriots are going to stand up and do the right thing. That we've gotten so complacent and so apathetic that we just sit back and watch the world burn and talk about how terrible it is on Facebook. The time is actually now to stand up and do something about it. Don't wait for a leader. Don't wait for the next Ronald Reagan. He's not coming. You are. You're what's there. You have it in you to get this done. We have long sat back and enjoyed the freedoms that the Constitution gave us. It protected us for the last 200 years. Now, it's time for us to protect her. It's time for us to stand up and defend her, or we won't have it left to stand for. It's going to be gone. We're going to be in chains. Our children are already going to spend the next half of their life paying the debt that we've incurred. Our children are slaves, and they don't even have a job yet. When do we stand up and say enough is enough? We have to fight. And again, I don't mean with arms, but with our feet in the air, our feet stomping on the ground, our fists in the air, our flags waving. That's the way we win this. Will they walk away?
And that's a point that has to be made. This is not about the violence, and this is not about going out, you know, and doing that. It's a matter of power in the numbers. We have
Absolutely.
Power if we unite and as one people and say enough is enough. And the whole point is it's not to be violent. This is not declaring
that's
any kind of war action. And that's another thing. Even though I fear, and I use the word fear, the likes of this administration and what they've done to our military, because, I mean, we all know what they're doing to the military as we speak, what they've done to them will go between embedding their friends, whoever it may be. They will embed whoever it is to take some kind of violent action to make it into something else. And I'm just going to say, for the sake of this discussion, because I do believe that will happen, they will embed some of the people who will come with the violence. And when the violence begins, we need to still stand firm and not be swayed by it, but that's not going to be easy to do.
No, it won't. No, it won't. But again, if the numbers are there, that's a very hard argument to make. Imagine being the guy that has to give the order. You are 100 cops, you go out there and disperse that crowd of 10,000. Imagine being the guy that has to put on his gear and stand out there in front of that crowd and try to disperse it. Especially when you look at the crowd and there are other law enforcement people, there are former military in the crowd that are saying, remember your oath. Put down your shield and join us. That's a hard thing to do, to be ordered to go into a crowd like that and try to disperse it. It's fairly intimidating when you look out at the crowd and I'm outnumbered 150-1. That's intimidating.
Well, the other thing I have heard people say, one quick thing, just so I can say, this is something else I've heard people ask me about or mention or concerned with it. We've been extremely vocal in saying we don't believe in chemical warfare when we're talking about all these other parts of the world. But, again, what would this crazy administration do to us?
Well, if they did, quite frankly, we win. All that we need to do is make that public knowledge. If some of us lose our lives, and it could happen, absolutely, it could happen. If some of us lose our lives, but it wakes up and starts the revolution, we're talking the Boston Massacre all over again. It's talking about something that will embolden the rest of us that sit back. We'll lose some that will go home in fear, absolutely. But we're going to gain a lot that are ready to fight. The argument about martial law and that this will give him the excuse and the power, quite frankly, if he wants that excuse, he's going to make one up.
True.
If he wants to come out there and institute martial law, I guarantee you that he'll find an excuse to do so.
Well, let me jump in here for a minute and do mention this because I've gotten a lot of information here and there and everywhere in the last few months that they do really plan maybe on doing something before this next election,
yes.
Mainly because our economy and the American dollar is going to crash, perhaps.
Yep.
And when that happens, we're going to have total chaos across this country.
Yep.
People aren't going to be able to get food. They're not going to be able to have anything. And that's when martial law would be declared. But one thing people don't ever stop and think of, and I do very many, many times, this nation has been blessed by never having a war like with Germany or anyone else, what they've gone through and had the destruction in this country, having to live every day getting up and trying to go to sleep at night, knowing that there is a war going on. And I don't know how many people realize that they can thank God for that.
I don't want my kids to ever see war on our soil. I don't ever want that. Ronald Reagan said that we want peace. We'll beg for peace. We'll reason for it. We'll negotiate for it. But we'll never surrender for it. That's not who we are. We are Americans.
But I don't think they understand, though, how grateful they should be.
Yes, absolutely.
Because they have not had to live like other people in other countries. And when it does come time to stand up for something or do something, I would think that they would be more than willing to participate to keep our nation free.
Look at the influx of patriotism that happened after 9/11. How many people, I can't imagine working at a recruiter's office when 9/11 happened. We had millions sign up or try to sign up. I believe right now we have 1.8 million vets that have returned from Operation Iraqi Freedom or Afghanistan. So that patriotism is still among us. It's still there. It may be cold a little bit, but it's going to take some little event that sparks that puts that fire back in our bellies. We talked mm-hmm. about that disease, that the lack of leadership and the apathy and sitting back and just watching the world burn. And we talked about how horrible it is, and we'll post about it on Facebook and everything else. But when it came time for action, no, we're just going to sit back and watch. Well, that disease typically gets fire to cure it. We burn the bodies, we burn the bedding, we burn those kind of things to call a disease. We need a fire in our bellies, a fire in our hearts that really inspires us and gets us ready for that. That one little thing that kicks it all off. I hope that Operation American Spring can be that. That we can be that spark that puts the fire back in our bellies as Americans, that makes us recognize who we are and what we stand for and why we're here. And the purpose of our government, what is it? And enforce it. That's our job as the people. We all the different branches of government have a job, right? Our job is not to go to the voting booth. It's to enforce them. It's to hold them, our people, our representatives. Remember that when that guy goes up there and votes, he's voting because he believes it's what you want. We have to hold them accountable because they're acting in our stead. And if they don't act in our stead, we need to hold them to account or drag them out by their ears. Our founding fathers would be tarring and feathering people in the streets right now.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yet we sit back in complete apathy. We have to stand up and fight. You mentioned infiltrators, and I want to answer that real quick. The way that I'm answering it with my team in Texas, now all I do for OAS is just organize and facilitate my state. I don't even like the term leader. My people lead this. I just kind of organize them. But as I sit back and I watch Texas, well, the first thing that I did when I determined that I wanted to go, that I needed to be a part of Operation American Spring, what does this mean? So how do I get there and how do I stay there? That's a logistical nightmare when I try to think about this alone. So what I decided I was going to do was I was going to go and get the biggest vehicle I could, the biggest car, the Suburban, the minivan, the church bus, whatever I could get my hands on and go. Once I got my vehicle, I started recruiting so I could fill my vehicle. When I reached 10 people, I needed to get to know these 10 people. If I'm going to go into battle with you, be it a battle of wills or a battle of arms, I don't care what the situation is. I need to know you. I need to trust you. I need to train with you. I need to work with you. So what we did was we decided that we were going to go and do small training missions together, be it a small local protest that we're going to go to, be it we had one group down in San Antonio that what they did was they went to their local nursing home, and they got three World War II vets, and they broke them out of the nursing home, and they took them to the local memorial and let them see it, took them out to dinner, and took them back to their home. That may not seem like much, but obviously it was a huge impact on those heroes' lives. It was a huge impact on them because they went as a team of individuals, four or five people, and they came out of it a team, no longer individuals. Mm-hmm. We've had one group that went out there and fed the homeless, set up a field kitchen, just like we're going to do in D.C. A small tent, the field kitchens, the camp stoves, everything else, and they cooked for 400 homeless. And they got it all done in about 2.5 hours, by the way.
Wow.
My My team, we went to West Virginia and delivered water to the people of West Virginia after that chemical spill. We delivered 90,000 pounds worth of water, 45,000 tons of water. We delivered up there to West Virginia. The way that we answer those infiltrators is to know our team. The only way we know our team is once we've built that team, once I've filled my car, we need to go out there and we need to do something. I don't care if it's go to the local IHOP and have a cup of coffee together. We need to get to know each other. I don't want to be the first time I meet you is in D.C. I need to know you now. We can't do it on a website because anybody can say anything on a website. We have to get in front of each other. If we can't get in front of each other, we need to have weekly conference calls. We need to be getting involved with each other. That's the answer to being infiltrated. Obviously, that doesn't mean that somebody can't show up in D.C., but we have to be ready to defend ourselves and police ourselves. So me and my team, as we sit there and we watch the crowd and we're all wearing this color T-shirt or this color hat or this armband or whatever that identifies us, so I know that I can trust that person or I feel like I can. But as I look out on the crowd and I see somebody else kind of in the mix and they've got a couple of rocks or a bottle that they're going to throw or something like that, what do? Do I call for the police? Do I let him do his thing? Do I sit back and watch? No, what my team is planning on doing is tackling the guy, put him in zip ties and hand him over to the cops ourselves. We're going to have to police our own. The police couldn't do it. The sheer numbers, they can't enforce it. And quite frankly, I think we all know that those infiltrators would probably work for the other side. And that would give them the excuse that they want. And we're going to have to police ourselves. Second off, we need to make it very clear what our rules of engagement are. And we have. They're defined on OperationAmericanSpring.org, our rules of engagement. When do we react? How do we react? At what level do we react? All of those things need to be clearly defined. So when somebody steps out of line and does something that they shouldn't, this wasn't us. We need to be able to watch that crowd. Now, we've got a lot of former military and police officers that are going to be our security team. They're going to watch the crowd ourselves. If something does get out of line, we're going to have to address it. And I don't mean just blow a whistle and wait for the cops to show up. I mean, we'll have to probably do citizens' arrest of our own people if it came to it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, how do we react when the police overreact, when they come out and do something unconstitutional? How do we react? Do we just let it happen? At some point, we've got to draw the line. That no, you're not going to confiscate my property. No, you're not going to stop my First Amendment rights. At some time, we've got to draw the line in the sand and say enough is enough. I would rather battle. If we're going to have a martial law or anything come at us from this lawless government, if they want to come at us, I would much rather have that battle in their backyard, in D.C., with 10 million patriots at my side, then back at home where they can pick us off one at a time. Will the infiltrators come? Absolutely. We just have to outnumber them.
What is the actual list of demands as we were talking about? Now, I know what my wish would be. I can give you a long list of what I would like to see happen to these people that are in Washington, D.C. these days. But when as we're there and we're saying, okay, here's what we are demanding happen, I know there's obviously we want to remove some of these so-called leaders out of public office, and then we need someone who truly takes that place. What is that process there as we try to actually get rid of some of these people out of there, like Pelosi and Harry Reid and Obama?
And McConnell and Boehner, and I think the most important guy up there is Holder. I think Attorney General Holder is probably one of the worst guys up there. The Congress has rules in place, constitutional rules, that go about replacing such and such leader or such and such position. We can't enforce that. We can't tell them you've got to have somebody there. They have their own process to begin replacing the speaker, replacing the minority leader and the majority leader. They have their own process in place, and we're going to have to let them do it. Do we get somebody else worse in place? Absolutely. We very well could. So what do we do about it? We keep the pressure on. We get rid of that person too. So our list of demands are for those seven people to go away: Obama, Biden, Reid, McConnell, Boehner, Pelosi, Holder. I think that's the list. And then sit back and enforce them to follow their own rules. You need to go about replacing those positions through your normal means. If we come up there and we're lawless ourselves and just say, well, I want this guy in charge or I want that guy in charge, we're no better than them. We have to do this through lawful means.
Exactly.
But we also have to keep the pressure on. Because remember, I keep going back to that point about fear. They need to be afraid. And if they're scared of us, we've already won. I don't care if we don't get anybody out. If we don't win one of those guys, but we have instilled fear, we've won a major victory.
Let me ask this. I don't want names or anything, and I'm not looking for anybody to do that. But have you ever received any response from any leadership of any kind or politicians regarding this OAS anyway, Operation Springs? Have you heard from anybody at all? And I'm not asking for names. Okay.
I've actually talked to three different congressmen from my state that have voiced their support.
Mm-hmm.
We've had several state legislatures members I've got three that are going with me, that are state legislatures that are going.
Great.
I had a flight not too long ago where I was sitting on a plane, and I always pay for the Wi-Fi as we go. I'm a computer nerd, so as I was on the plane and I'm flying home, I had the guy next to me on the plane, and he looks at my screen, and I can tell just by the look of this guy that he's military. He's got the haircut, he's got the demeanor, he sits up that way. It's obvious who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of hard to deny who I am as well. I have that demeanor. So us military people can see each other. So I recognize that he's military. Now, I'm not going to question him, and I don't think he's going to question me. Because sometimes that can be a little awkward in conversation. But he says, do you support this? I said, absolutely. I support it wholeheartedly. I'm doing everything I can to make it a reality. And I'm pushing this effort from my level. What do you think? Well, I know that we've had three briefings on it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Positive or negative? And so it depends on who you ask. We've got the attention of the people in D.C. They're watching. The question is, are they paying attention? Will they continue to ignore us? Will they mock us? Or will they get scared? They get scared and do something stupid. I don't know. All I know is that I told you in the beginning that I felt compelled by God that I needed to go. And I don't quite understand that. I feel like Jonah telling me to do what? God, have you lost your mind or why? This doesn't make any sense. But I feel like I have to go. Call me crazy, call me whatever, I don't care.
No.
I feel like I have to go. Now, from that, I've got to have a little faith. A little faith in myself and in my ability that we can get this done. A little faith in my fellow Texans and my fellow Americans that we as patriots can get this done. If barbarians in Egypt can do this, crazy Nordic Iceland people can do this. Certainly, America has enough love of their country and enough aspiration to be free people that we can stand up and do this. I have enough faith in them. I have enough faith in God that he will provide the means and the methods. I don't have all those answers. I don't. I trust in him. I do trust in our leadership, the Colonel Riley's and Ron McKinley's and the other guys that are running the show. That they will come up with the solutions that can truly make the change and affect what we're trying to accomplish. I think they can do it. I don't know about everybody else, but to quote Patrick Henry, I don't know what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. I think we're at that point. Not necessarily, again, I'm not calling for a fight, but we have to stand up and have our voices be heard. We have to get active. We're not going to win by sitting back and arguing. We're not going to win by sitting back and watching. We're not going to get stronger through inaction and irresolution. We're not going to get stronger that way. It has to be out there.
Well, I'm kind of curious. You mentioned that you had spoken to some state representatives and your congressional representatives in Texas. And I was debating, and maybe, I don't know if this is an idea for others that are out there listening to do, you know, pick up the phone and call every one of your representatives at the local, state, especially the state and federal levels, more so probably, and ask them, what are they thinking about this? Are they going to, you know, what communication should we be sending to them right now? If nothing else, to me, again, it shows for those, especially for those who may not be able to go, to show the strength or show support, yes, we are taking back this country. Are you with us or are you against us? And how do we kind of put the pressure on them via the phone at the same time as we're doing this piece?
But that's, you just nailed it. Doing just that, to calling them and putting the pressure on them. If you don't do your job, we're going to do it for you. Doing the same thing, calling the local press sources, writing a letter to the editor, calling in on every talk radio show that you can get on and talk about Operation American Spring. Ask the host to get involved. We're going to have to raise the pressure. We got to raise the heat. We're down to 72 days, I think. We're running out of time. And without the numbers, quite frankly, it doesn't work. Without the numbers, there's no way we're going to accomplish it. I don't think we need 10 million, but we need a couple anyway. And if we don't have, out of 330 million people, if we don't have 2 million that are willing to stand up and fight for our freedoms, quite frankly, we need to pack our stuff and move to Belize. There might not be much of us left if that's all we are. I don't believe that. I don't believe that for a second. I think that we'll have those numbers. The enthusiasm is there. The fire is building. The momentum is going. But we definitely need everybody involved. And if you can't go, again, make those phone calls. Call your congressman. Call your senator. Don't email him. He's going to continue to ignore that. The phone calls mean a lot more to them. Take the time. Make the phone call.
And the other point, you know, there is power in numbers. If we're there united, united we stand. At the same time, which I agree with you that the people are, if you even got 10% of the people who are totally outraged with what this country is doing today and what is happening to everything to do with this country, EPA taking our land and Common Core teaching communism and, you know, if you just get 10% of those who are ticked off at this moment to be there, it's a done deal.
Millions and millions. We'd be stacked all the way up to Baltimore.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many people. On the other side, if, you know, especially after all this time when this has been being coordinated, if we do not get those people, which deep down I don't think that's going to happen. I think people are going to show up after having been to a couple of these events in D.C. with people protesting Obamacare and everything else. If it would happen that you don't get the right turnout, then we truly can pack up because it will be over and we will have surrendered, as I see it, if we don't get the bodies there, if we don't get enough people there standing up. I mean, in my own case, regardless of what happens there, I don't surrender one way or the other. It's a live free or die routine for me as well. I'm not going to surrender to this communistic takeover of this country, which is what I see happening right now. And so I wouldn't do that. But as the masses, if we don't have those masses there, we are truly, we're in big trouble.
Well, I think that the next step, for at least here in Texas, my plans are if OAS fails, now it's time to hold my state legislature accountable and go to them and beat up on them. That if you won't do your job, I tried as a free man to go up there and institute the change. I didn't have the political clout or the pressure to do so. So I am holding you accountable, state legislature. Stand up to this. Tell them no. We have a few states that have kind of led the way, Utah and South Carolina, that have come out and said, you know, no to this or no to that, and no to Obamacare or no to your gun regulations. Those aren't coming into my state. We've had a few that have been brave and brazen in their opposition to this. We need more. So if we aren't capable of doing these things in D.C., the next step is to get in the face of our state legislatures. Now, here in Texas, we talk about that nasty little word called secession quite often.
I love it.
Well, there are a lot of issues that come with it, and that's probably another show. There are a lot of issues that come with it. I'm personally not ready yet. I want to save my nation. I'm not ready to leave her yet. I would rather kick out New York and California and tell those guys to hike. The rest of us will stay. You don't want to be a part of our nation anymore? Fine. Good riddance. Have a good day.
Oh,
okay.
I'm with you on that. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Well, one thing in Florida, I can honestly say, I have talked to several people. They do plan on going. I've talked to people in Louisiana. They plan on going and staying. But out of 320-some million people in this country, what people that are listening need to realize, this is not a party issue. This is not a Democrat, a Republican, an Independent, a Libertarian, whatever anybody is. This is an American issue. This is all about liberty and the sovereignty of the United States that is being destroyed. We don't have the time to play games anymore. It is coming to a fast end. And just like Chris said, I've seen it. I've talked about it. I am with several groups that I work with 7 days a week. And the situation, and unfortunately, most Americans do not realize just how severe we are being attacked from every angle there is. They are watching this boob tube. They're going to the movies or the baseball games or whatever, when they need to be paying more attention and start getting involved and more or less educating themselves on what's going on. If not for themselves, because we'll be gone, but for your children. You owe this to the children not to depart from this earth, leaving them in bondage and slavery by the organized greed that is running this country.
I heard an argument from a gentleman that called me today named Mr. West. Mr. West told me, the way that he's approaching it, when somebody says, I can't go to D.C., if your child was in a car wreck in D.C., and the hospital or the police calls you and says, your child's up here, and they're in trouble, you're going to drop everything, and you're going to go running. You're going to flee for D.C., and if you've got to stay there by their bedside, you're going to do it. You're going to find a way to get there. Well, quite frankly, your children are in trouble.
Yep.
Your children are desperate. They don't know it, but they're desperate. And the only way that we're going to break that chain is to get there. Find the way to get there. Find it. It's critical. We are at a constitutional emergency. This is where we are. Find a way to get there. Your children's lives are at stake, quite literally.
Oh, they are. There's no question about it. Absolutely no question.
And I think anybody that's got kids that are a little bit older, they should bring the kids along if they can. Obviously not real young kids. That's a whole different situation. But Kids that are a little bit older, I think they should be involved as much as they possibly can, because this really is, they need to know the truth and need to get away from this communism, common core stuff that's going on, and learn what's really, you know, freedom. You fight for freedom. It's not free. It's about sacrifice. This country would never have survived if there weren't people willing to sacrifice, and this is what it is, and this is what it is. There is one other thing I'd like to see them add on their list of demands, because I believe it's so critical to this whole thing, too, is shutting down that Federal Reserve, because that Federal Reserve is a big part of this problem, too. I mean, it's destroying us just as much as the morons in office.
Absolutely it is. Absolutely it is. I think that an audit of the Fed is pretty critical. Absolutely. I don't know if that can be a part of our demands, at least not in the initial phase, because they'll just continue to ignore us. As they've done in that audit the Fed movement and that petition that Ron Paul and Rand Paul have been pushing for so long. But if we're able to restore that fear that the federal government has of us, maybe that's when we can implement that. It has to happen. You're absolutely right. It has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's be aware and educate ourselves on what it means when we actually do that. What could that do to the value of the dollar? Are we prepared for the consequences of that audit? Believe wholeheartedly that we have to do it. Our children's lives depend on it. But we got to be ready for the consequences, because they won't be nice.
One thing, though, with everything that's going on and has been going on, Chris, for years now, myself and the people that I know, we have prepared ourselves for a disaster. I put a pitcher pump on my well. I'm going to make sure I have water. I have enough canned food to last me for a year, plus I have seeds of all kinds, and you prepare. I always have extra medicines, anything in a toiletry of any type. Extra bird food, because I have big parrots. So they have over a year's supply of food at all times. So does my dog. You have to be prepared nowadays. Because of what we are going through, you never know what is going to happen. And there's only a few days' supply of food in a grocery store. And when that food is gone, your job is going to be protecting your home, because if anyone thinks you have food, you won't have it for long.
Yeah.
So I encourage people to start preparing and keep prepared.
That collapse is coming no matter what.
Yep.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say real quick, what I've been telling people for 5 to 10 years now, it's like, the Great Depression is coming. You think that what happened back in the 30s was the Great Depression? You ain't seen nothing to it. What we're going to see is going to happen here when we try to reset this country, or we fall to communism or whatever else happens. It's not going to be pretty. They better start thinking about what it is. And they need to be telling their kids what's going on, because the me generation that's out there, that's just so used to picking up that cell phone and texting and watching cable and playing and whatever else, you know, there's going to be a lot of mental breakdowns, I think, when it really happens, because so many people just truly have no clue or appreciation of what this is all going to mean when it hits the fan.
Yeah. And like you said,
no, because we don't appreciate what we have as Americans. We really don't. And the children are given everything. They don't know what it is to sacrifice at all, unless they do come from a poor family and are having everyday needs that they have to try and meet. But the majority of children, they're given cars, they're giving all this electronics. And what have they done to earn it? So why should they appreciate what they have? And the American people are the same way. They had freedom. They didn't hang on to it. They're not willing to stand up for it now. Shame on them. Because once it's gone, you're going to have a heck of a time getting it back.
When Ben Franklin came out of the Constitutional Convention, they asked him, what do we have? What kind of government do we have? And he responded, you have a republic. mm-hmm. as long as you can keep it.
Yep, exactly.
The founders understood this so well, and I spend a lot of time, you know, I go through the quotes, when you talk about the Federal Reserve, it was Jefferson who kept saying a central bank will destroy you, the worst you can do is a central bank, and look what's happened in everything to do with a central bank, and of course, President George Washington, his farewell address, the political parties, anything, associations, factions, et cetera, will divide us and destroy us, and it's just amazing how much the founders truly understood. And what they tried to warn us of. They really have told us all of this. This is nothing new. And, of course, some people do compare it, and I think it's true, to the fall of Rome.
I would encourage everybody to go out and I think it's on history.org. Google history.org and Patrick Henry and listen to his Liberty or Death speech and tell me that it's not relevant today. It's 8 minutes long, and they've got an audio reenactment of it. Just listen to it. 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I promise you, you're going to come out of there going, holy crap, we're there?
Oh, yeah, we're there.
History repeats itself.
Yes, it does.
There's no doubt. Okay, well, we've gone a little bit over an hour where you can talk. We got until 9 o'clock, so it's whatever anybody wants to talk about. It's entirely up to you, Chris. I don't know how much time you've got, if there's any other information you want. But, because to me, what we're fighting for, we can easily talk, like I said, these public-private partnerships. It's the way for the private sector, the rich, to literally buy out this government so we have no government anymore. And when that happens, it's all in this movement to this communist society that we've allowed to nitpick its way, little by little, gnawing away, and now we're here. We can look across. Why would you do this? And I even still hear people today to say, this is the United States of America. You have rights. They can't do this. They are doing it. Wake up and smell the coffee and what's going on. Look all around how a lady here in Florida can't live off the grid. It's like, these people don't seem to even understand what freedom even means anymore. And, of course, when you go and actually ask somebody what is communism, they have no clue either. I find it just totally amazing when I ask, well, what is communism? What do you think communism is? And they really don't have any awareness of it. And it's like, that's what this is all about. And it's just amazing. It's scary at times when I see it, when it seems like the ignorance, the dumbing down, the deliberate dumbing down of Americans has been so successful in so many ways, and it's up to us to say, no, let's go back and remember what this was all about.
Mm-hmm.
It's natural for people to indulge in the illusions of hope. We're apt to shut our eyes against a painful truth and listen to the song of that siren till she transforms us into beasts. Is this the part of wise men engaged in an arduous struggle for liberty? Are we deposed to be one of those who, having eyes, see not, and having ears, hear not the things which so nearly concern our temporal salvation? For my part, whatever anguish of spirit it may cost, I am willing to know the whole truth, to know the worst, and to provide for it. That's Patrick Henry.
Mm-hmm. No, I've read that before, yeah. But it's really sad because we've lost over a decade of young people that aren't being taught the Constitution. And I don't know if you're aware of this, Chris, but there is a law that any learning or teaching institution by law has to teach the U.S. Constitution September 17th, the week of September 17th. In every school or institution that receives federal funding, most people...
Well, I can guarantee you that they're having that class, but what they're going to have that class is, here's the Bill of Rights, how do we tear it apart?
Oh, please, don't even go there.
They've had that class. My son came home not too long ago with this book called The Amended Constitution and Declaration of Independence. Amended.
What grade is he in?
No, fifth.
Wow.
And he came home with this book, and he said, Dad, you need to read this. It's going to piss you off. And he hands it to me. And I'm telling you, it fits in my back pocket. It's one of these little pocket guides to the Constitution. And it as I read it, I didn't make it past the first page, and there's steam coming out of my ears. I'm so pissed.
Oh, gosh.
It had me fuming, and this is the thing that we're teaching our children.
Can you do us a favor on this? Contact Sally, or Sally have his contact. We would like to know the publisher or how to get our hands on that book.
It's Teacher's Discovery, the Annotated U.S. Constitution and Declaration of Independence. I've got an ISBN number for you if you want to look it up. I'll email it to you. I'm going to read you the very first argument. And it's up at the top, it has bold, freedom, much glorified and speechified as our nation's guiding ideal to be defended against all who do or might even threaten it. Freedom runs like a stream through America's history and culture. The Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution are a wellspring. These documents, now it sounds all good there, right? These documents, composed 200 years ago by now decomposing white guys, contain living words, which are the representation of expression of democracy now. Well, first off, we're not a democracy.
No, thank you.
Decomposing white guys? Hypocrisy abounds. All men are created equal was written by a slaveholder. The Constitution created a government that was a foul institution, and women were left out of the process. That's just the very beginning. It goes on and on, and on every page, it's just make you steam come out, your blood coming out of your eyes. It just infuriates you. Decomposing white guys.
And this is Texas, which is it C-SCOPE or are they truly Common Core now, or some combination of both, or it's all the same?
It was C-SCOPE. Our state legislature came out and banned it from being purchased anymore. But the problem is, for the school districts that had already purchased it, they were stuck with it. It didn't make them change anything that they had already purchased. It just made it to where none of the other schools could get any more. Now, Common Core and C-SCOPE have both been banned in our schools. But this school that my kids came out of is a C-SCOPE school. When I got this document, when I got this little book, I went ballistic. And the next thing you know, there were 80 bikers parked out in front of my little school of 300 kids protesting this. We had copies of it. We were handing it out to every parent as they drove by. We were passing this out. Now, mind you, I didn't say a word to my principal. I didn't say a word to my teacher. All of a sudden, this shows up out of nowhere. It was all over Facebook. That same day, they were getting calls from different media outlets wanting their opinion. The National Enquirer, the National Review called them and asked them. Another lady, the Red Hot Conservative, called and asked them, "Hey, do you want to give a statement about this document, this textbook that came home with the kids?" This poor principal was overwhelmed. He didn't know that book was there. And as soon
I want to get a copy of that. I'm willing to pay for it.
Shipping
or anything else.
It was $4 on Amazon because I bought 300 of them and passed them out to all the parents in the line dropping kids off at school. It was $4 and $3 or $4. I don't remember exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The superintendent that bought the book has resigned. The pressure that we put on them was so intense that the principal was scared he was going to lose his job. Now, again, as soon as he read this, he pulled it from the shelves and he didn't want anything to do with it. I got to get this out of here. This is terrible. I mean, he agreed with us completely, but he had no idea it was on the shelves. And quite frankly, shame on him, because that's his job. That's his duty.
Yes.
But we were able to institute a little change. So if 80 men can show up and rally at a school and get the change we're looking for, parents, just by passing out flyers, we can do Operation American Spring. We can do pretty much anything if we'll just put our minds together and stand shoulder to shoulder for a cause, we can get it done. But we have to get active. We have to get out from in front of the computer. We have to get out from in front of the TV and go out there and get in their face. That's what it's going to take. We can be the change that we're wanting to see. We can do it. We just got to unite.
Oh, yeah. Strength is numbers.
It's so true. And, I mean, I deep down, I know there's enough people to do this. I know it. I just hope that everybody who wants to do it has the courage to stand up and do it. Right now, again, like I said, I've been contemplating going. Excuse me. I've definitely been on the Hill a couple of times, and I never regretted the fact that I was involved with any of it. And I feel like I need to be there, and if there's any way I can be, I'm going to. Because I totally agree with what you're saying. It's a matter of numbers. And you know what? Go ahead.
I want to toss out my number. If you're one like yourself that wants to go but is not sure of the methodology to get there, you're not sure how you're going to camp out or how you're going to maintain, if you're not sure how you're even going to get there, we have some options available to us if we can just put our minds together and accomplish it. The carpools can really cut down on the expense. The campsites that we've acquired give us a place to stay. Don't get me wrong, it's not going to be easy. Consider it a camping trip. If this is your family vacation, rough it a little bit. Stay in a tent. Those kind of things. We have options. So if you are curious about those options and you want to know how to get involved and how to step up and either be a leader in your state or help out the leader that's already existing or organize a group of 10 people to go with you, whatever the case may be, if you need help and guidance along the way, feel free to call me. My phone number is 903-285-0915. I'll help out as best I can. Now, I'm in Texas, and I've got a job of organizing my state. There are people in Florida that are doing the same job that I'm doing in Florida, and I can give you those contacts. I can get you in touch with those people. Check out OperationAmericanSpring.org. Join your state groups. Look at them. Get involved. Be a part of the solution. Like you've stated, there are a lot of other groups, just separate groups, that are not necessarily a part of our website that are still attending. The Rolling Thunder people, the 2 Million Biker group, the Sons of Liberty Riders, the Overpasses for America groups, all of these guys are going. Not necessarily with Operation American Spring officially, but going in support of it. So link up with one of those groups. Lots of people that are going. We can get you there.
Chris, very slowly again, let's give the people a few minutes if they would like to get that number again. And like myself, I can't go because I have a huge disability as far as standing and walking. But
I would actually encourage you because we have places for you to go. Not necessarily on the mall in D.C., but we've got campsites back in Virginia that we need security at. We need somebody with a radio. We need somebody with a cell phone that's kind of organizing the effort. We need people driving cars and running shuttles back and forth. There are a lot of things that we can do that don't necessarily require you to stand on your feet all day. If you want to work in a kitchen, if you want to drive a car and shuttle people back and forth to the metro, there's lots of different jobs that we can do to get people involved. I've got a double amputee, Iraqi vet, double amputee that's going in his chair.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's probably not going to be able to go into the city, but he'll be there in a support role, manning communications, working security, working the kitchen, whatever the case may be, to maintain the camp while everybody else is in D.C. There are jobs that can be done.
That's very interesting to know, yes. Can you give us that number again? Just do it 903.
Slowly. 903-285-0915. Also, OperationAmericanSpring.org. Go there, join your state groups.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely going to find out who the Florida contacts are because I want to get them. I want to talk to them myself, and then I also want to see if they can come on the show and give people some contact information, whatever, to help coordinate what's going on here in Florida. And the idea of carpooling, and, you know, kind of what you're talking about, the Virginia thing, there's a lot of people who could do stuff, you know, be there aiding, getting people, shuttling people back and forth. Now, I can tell you the times that I've been there, and Charlie Klein, who he was listening a few minutes ago, he just dropped off. We were there for the Restoring Honor event with Glenn Beck. We were there for the 9/12 event. And at the 9/12, we drove two vehicles into the area, and we were parked right out by the Capitol building by the pond, the reflection pond there. So we were parked right there on Pennsylvania Avenue. And then the other time we were parked down by the Lincoln Memorial. So we were right in the thick of stuff there. But I can easily see having people, having a command point, if you want to call it that, command center, whatever it is, to have people shuttle people back and forth. Because when on that event, I think it was a 9/12 event, the metro was so crammed it was taking people like 10 tries to even get on the train and stuff like that. So there's definitely stuff like that for other people to do who maybe don't want to be in the thick of it or can't be in the thick of it in the city itself. So that makes perfect sense.
There's lots of things that can be done. RVs are really critical to this. We're using a lot of RVs as our sanitation points because of the black tanks. So if you have an RV and you can go, even if you're not going to be able to go into the city, just having that at the camp to give us bathroom facilities and a supplemental kitchen. So that way we can haul it back to the dump station every other day or every day and clean out that black tank. That's a lot cheaper than porta potties.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm telling you, there's just so much to think about, and we need to do it so badly. We do. And if we don't take a stand, I guess it was Jefferson who was saying something about when people fear the government, there's tyranny. When the government fears the people, there's liberty. And that's really where we're at. That right now, we have the reverse. The people are fearing this government because this government has become tyrannical. It's no longer what it's supposed to be. It's no longer any form of republic. There's no longer any true enforcement of the Constitution. That's just not where we're at, and people need to wake up and smell the coffee, and that's where we're at. So, I mean, if you want communism, if you really think, and of course I don't think most Americans have a clue what that really, really means, even though we're getting there, if that's what you want, then, you know, that's what's going to happen. But I think most of us are still willing to fight for the freedom.
I hope
no,
so.
Definitely.
I hope you're right. I believe that you are right.
Yep.
It's just a question of getting the word out to everybody and getting them active, getting them out there.
Yes.
Well, guys,
and understanding that they can make a difference. Yes.
Okay, well, Chris, first of all, I'd like to thank you. Thank you. And we will be with you finding out what contacts, because I know several veterans that plan on going, and I'm sure they would like to be able to work with the groups in the state of Florida to encourage more people and get a plan going that would accommodate more people.
Yeah, and there are quite a few groups going from Florida. I know that Colonel Riley himself, the leader of this movement, is from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of people in your area that are planning on heading there. So getting together and working on carpools and working on logistics and figuring out what campsites you want to stay at and how you're going to get there and how you're going to transport back and forth from the city and those kind of things. Those are details that we need to work on now. And like I said, I really believe that we've got to get out there and get to know each other prior to May.
Right.
I think that's critical.
Oh, I can understand that, yes. Well, again, thank you for everything. Thank you for your service to this country. And God bless you and your family. And you are in our prayers.
Yeah, we're going to need it. Absolutely, keep praying for us.
Yes.
Love you, girls. Thank you so much for having me on. Keep
you
up the great
bet.
Work there in Florida.
All right, God bless America. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.